Web Marketing That Works podcast, episode number 2.
Welcome to the Web Marketing That Works podcast. Come behind the scenes of real-life marketing experiments and listen in as amazing guests confess the truth about what really works. Now, here are your hosts, Adam Franklin and Toby Jenkins.
Hello, listeners. It's Adam Franklin from the Web Marketing That Works podcast. I'm here with our co-host, Toby Jenkins. How's things, Tobes?
Good, thanks, Ads. Hi, everyone.
This is the show for people who love marketing on the web. Toby and I will take you behind the scenes of real-life marketing experiments, the good, the bad, and the ugly. We confess what's failed and reveal the truth about what really works.
This show is brought to you by our new book, Web Marketing That Works, and specifically the bonus templates that go with it. So if you're keen to download the bonus 33 free templates from the book, please duck over to our website, bluewiremedia.com.au/book.
Now, the guest for our show today is a guy called Trent Dersmid.
Cool. And what are we exploring with Trent?
Well, interestingly, Trent is a Canadian guy, and as you know, we've both been interviewed on his podcast, so it seemed very appropriate for him to be the first guest that we interview on ours. And specifically, we're going to look at his book launch, because when we did the interview with Trent, he had his new book had just come out, and he shares what worked and what didn't work with his book launch. We dive into his three-tiered pricing model and also this idea of having an elephant offer. And we also look at his experiences with podcasting, because his Bright Ideas podcast, he's recorded over 100 episodes, and we learn the good, the bad, and the ugly from that as well. So that's what we're going to hear with Trent's interview.
Sounds great. Yeah, let's get started.
Cool. Hello, viewers. It's Adam Franklin here, and I've got the pleasure of being joined by Trent Dersmid. He's the founder of Bright Ideas, the host of the Bright Ideas podcast, and the author of the book called Digital Marketing Handbook, the ultimate small business guide to putting client attraction on autopilot. Welcome, Trent.
Hey, man. Thanks very much, Adam. I appreciate it. I think actually this is the first time I've been introduced as the author of a book, because I just published it in December, and this is my first interview since.
Well, congratulations. Now, what we'd like to cover on these interviews, Trent, is web marketing that works. And to give our listeners and viewers a bit of a background, would you mind giving us a little overview of your business?
Sure. So Bright Ideas was started as a place where I thought that small business owners would go to learn more about how they could leverage online marketing to help attract more customers for their business. Because in my previous life, as we were talking about off camera, I grew a business to a couple of $1 million a year in revenue selling IT services to small businesses. But back then, I was the cold call cowboy. I don't really think content marketing was ever spoken of. I don't know if WordPress even existed. So, you know, it was kind of old school customer acquisition, and it was really hard because, you know, trying to find salespeople that could prospect and do all the things, it was just very, very difficult. And so when I started Bright Ideas, I thought I'd learned a lot about online marketing at that point. I'd been online for about 2 years and had made a pretty decent amount of money and built a fairly successful blog. But I made some bad choices because my blog was, the topic kind of had a short shelf life. And when Google changed their algorithm, that first blog sort of died with the Penguin and Panda update. But nonetheless, I'd learned a whole lot. So I created Bright Ideas to take that knowledge and put it on display, but make it available to small business owners that wanted to attract customers more easily. And I started interviewing a lot of entrepreneurs on my podcast. And from there, I started writing a lot of blog posts, and it all just kind of took off.
Okay. So in terms of the actual stuff that has worked, obviously marketing is all about experiments. What are some of the things lately that have worked well from a marketing point of view?
I think there's a couple. I mean, there's a long list of things that have worked well. For me, having a podcast worked very well from the perspective of engaging an existing audience. It helped me to build it a bit, but it wasn't great for building an audience, but it is exceptionally good for creating engagement with an audience that you already have. So when it comes to building an audience, the most important thing is to really make sure that you've picked who the audience is you're trying to connect with. I see, you know, in my coaching and just questions on the or comments on my posts and emails I get a lot of people asking me, you know, how to get traction. And almost always they're trying to be a generalist. They just don't have a target audience in mind. You know, we have an agency and we work with clients, and I often ask this question at the beginning of the discussion: who's your target audience? And the answer is almost always small businesses. Well, that's, you know, you're never going to be able to stand out amongst your competition if you're just targeting small businesses, because the whole thing about marketing, and this is not even just online marketing, but about marketing, is you need to have a unique selling proposition. And the key word in that sentence is unique. So if you are just trying to sell, you know, like using my old company as an example, we didn't pick a niche because I, you know, didn't know any better back then, but we were just selling IT services to small businesses. Whereas a guy that and we did okay. We did a couple $1 million a year. But there was a guy who I interviewed in my very first podcast episode. It's a guy by the name of Mike Michlowitz, and he wrote a really good book called The Pumpkin Plan. And Mike built a very, very similar IT services company to the one that I did, but he grew his quite a bit bigger and it was quite a bit more profitable because he focused exclusively on delivering IT services to hedge funds. So what he did was picked a very profitable audience that really valued their IT support, and he focused exclusively on that audience. So my number one piece of advice to everyone is, no matter what it is that you're trying to sell, you really need to make sure that you pick that specific audience and identify who your avatars are in the audience. So let's use an example. Maybe you're selling marketing services to a dentist's office. Well, there's more than one decision maker. There's an influencer and there's a decision maker. Most times in a dentist's office, the influencer is the office manager. They're the ones that are doing the preliminary legwork. They're probably in charge of marketing, as it were, but they don't sign the check. The dentist who owns the practice is the one that signs the check. And as the person trying to get them as a client, you may never speak to the dentist, but the influencer is going to be the one that ultimately convinces the dentist one way or the other. So not picking a target market and not identifying the avatars or personas rather that are in that target market. Those are two things that work really, really well and two things that I see so many people not doing.
They're the types of things that really come first in that strategic planning part, isn't it? Understanding your buyers and then what problems do they have and how can you solve them better than other people in the marketplace?
Correct. Because at the end of the day, no matter really what you sell, you're in the business of solving problems. The only reason people part with any money is because they have pain and they want the pain to go away. The pain could be, I'm not getting enough customers, so therefore I'm going to buy marketing services. Or the pain could be, my overhead is too high, therefore I need some productivity tools so I can get more productivity out of each employee. So you really, really need to understand what the pain is, what's keeping your customer awake at night, and then position yourself, your company, your product as an aspirin pill.
And if you're the dentist yourself, then the customers actually literally have a pain in their teeth, and they come and see you. Now let's dive into your book launch that happened recently. I've been following that quite closely. Can you talk us through, I guess, what went well from a marketing perspective, but also how you packaged up your offer? It wasn't just a book you were selling, was it?
No, it wasn't. And I want to credit a friend of mine by the name of Nathan Berry with giving me some very, very good advice on this. So a lot of people in the world of written books, I'm now in that club, and I think a lot of them think, well, I'll sell my book on Amazon. Or, you know, they're either going to try and get published or they're going to self-publish. And if they self-publish, they're probably going to do like maybe a Kindle book or something on Amazon, or maybe they're going to use CreateSpace and print one or what have you. But in any case, what they all have in common most often is that they produce just the book. And so Nathan said to me, he said, you want to make your book available, but you want to be able to offer tiered pricing. So three price points is what worked very, very well for him. And so I thought, all right, so if the book itself is going to be the lowest price, and I chose to self-publish and I chose premium pricing. So $39 is not a cheap price for a book, but there's a lot of value when people, you know, if they can get one extra customer, they got their $39 back and then some. So I knew that the topic was one that lended itself to higher pricing. And I also knew that the nature, because it's a how-to book, it's a teaching book. So I knew that a lot of the material that I was covering in the book could be covered even better in a video format. And I also knew, having interviewed, you know, like 100 people on my podcast now, that there would also be lots of people who I had interviewed and people who I knew and could interview who would also have really good insight to share that was very relevant to the topic of the book. So I put together two tiers or three tiers of pricing. So one was just the book. And then I created, I think it was 8 or 9 video tutorials, 8 or 9 video interviews, and then 5 kind of done for you resources. And I sort of split those up into the tier 2 price, which was $99, and then the tier 3 price, which is called the complete package, which was $249. And the $249 package brought in the lion's share of the revenue during the book launch by quite a margin. I could actually pull up the post so I could quote specific numbers. But had I not packaged it up in that way, like I think we did 17,000 bucks worth of book, worth of product in the first 10 days. Where is my book report here? And there it is. We would not have done nearly that much had I only had, you know, like a $39 book.
And why do you think that is? Are people looking for that extra value, or some people just, you know, that premium price or premium product in their head that they want the best quality or the best option out there? Or what do you think it is?
I think it's a combination of a couple of things. I think that there are people out there who would rather watch a video than read a book. I think that there are people out there who, if given the option to buy the premium option, will buy the premium option. I positioned the premium option to have exponentially more value than the basic option. I also gave people who bought it when I launched the book the opportunity to get one-on-one contact with me. And, you know, it was surprising. 45% of the sales came from people who knew me. 55%, their purchasing the book was their very first exposure to me. So, you know, maybe that extra bonus of getting, you know, a consulting call with me wasn't a huge value to those people because they didn't really know me that well at that point, or they didn't know me at all. And now I've lost my train of thought.
That's okay. I actually noticed with my product launch recently, we also offered 15 days worth of marketing advice from myself and Toby. And it's only early days in terms of that support period starting, but there's less than 10% that have taken us up on that offer so far. And we have been quite visible. We've emailed everybody to remind them. So I think it's a great value add, but to actually deliver that level of service doesn't take too much time or effort, because not that many people so far. I could be proven wrong in the next 10 days, but so far, not many.
Yeah, that was my experience as well. We, I forget what the exact number of orders that we got. If I can find it here. Yeah, it was level 3. I forget which. It was like 100 orders or something like that that had access to the extra stuff. And I would say maybe 10, 15% at the most actually took me up on the call, which is a surprise. You know, I would have thought that they would have all wanted the opportunity to ask questions directly of the author of the book.
Now, Trent, let's backtrack a bit and look back over your career in business and as a marketer, and let's have a look at things that didn't go according to plan. Most people call them when things fail, and people in business and in marketing know that there's a huge long list of failures, many of which people aren't necessarily familiar with. We don't tend to talk them up as much or bring attention to them because it's a sign of, you know, vulnerability. But what I like to do is explore them, one, because people listening will realize, you know, we all make mistakes, we're in this, we're experimenting, and we're learning from that. But secondly, it goes to show what, you know, what you can learn from it. And that's really what I'd like to dive into. So is there an example or a couple of examples if we need it?
How many would you like?
Yeah, well, I guess, I mean, I've been following your blog for a little while. What's one of the major mistakes where you've really learned something?
In my entire period online, so let me start with the first big mistake. When I first got online, after selling my other business, I took some time off. I learned how to surf and, you know, moved to Southern California and just kind of hung out for a bit. And then I decided it was time to kind of get cracking again. I didn't do a good job of selecting my first online business. So my blog became very, very popular. It actually had even more traffic than Bright Ideas has. But I mentioned earlier, it didn't have a long shelf life. And the critical mistake that I made was I didn't think about, and I'm in hindsight, I'm really quite embarrassed that I didn't think about this, but I didn't think about the shelf life of the topic, the business model that I had chosen. And I had chosen a business who basically I put all of my eggs, all of my traffic eggs in the Google basket. So I was 100% dependent upon the current iteration of the Google algorithm to drive traffic to my sites. Because back then I didn't know that Google changes their algorithm as often as they do. And so the result of that was I essentially, when Penguin and Panda came out, got put out of business. I went from, you know, 20 grand a month to almost nothing in about 2 or 3, maybe 4 months. So that was pretty painful. And I had, with that blog, I had positioned myself with my tribe as, you know, in this being knowledgeable in that space. And of course, when Google turned the lights out, it was pretty awful because I decided, well, I'm going to go pick a different, because I realized that that audience wasn't one that was necessarily going to move with me as I changed my topic a bit. And so that's why I created the Bright Ideas brand. So I kind of had to do a do-over. And it's a lot of work to go back to zero and start a whole new blog and a new identity kind of all over again. So I'd say that was a pretty big mistake. And then another mistake that I made with Bright Ideas is I waited too long to monetize. I actually didn't even attempt to monetize for a full year. And I don't really know why I did that. One, obviously, because I didn't need the money. And when you sell a business, one of the bad things about selling a business and getting a big check is you get comfortable. And comfortable is actually not, I mean, people who don't have money are going to be listening to this going, oh, F you, butthead, you know, but honestly, you get comfortable and you make stupid decisions out of that comfort because you don't have that sense of urgency to bring the money in the door. And so I waited too long to monetize Spread Ideas. And as soon as I decided to start monetizing, the money came in reasonably quickly. And I thought to myself, gosh, why didn't I do this earlier? Another mistake that I made was I automated a little too much, a little too soon, because I'm a really big fan of using Infusionsoft to automate a lot of things. And this has really kind of come to light in some interviews. So I've interviewed in the last week, they're not published yet, but a lot of founders of software as a service companies, online software companies. And the one thing, and these are all successful guys that have got venture financing and, you know, like they're really blowing up big in a good way. But they all started, you know, getting their very first customers by personal relationships. They didn't spend a bunch of developer time building automated onboarding processes. they wanted to talk to their customers first, their early customers, like the first 30, 40, 50 customers, because they realized that there was a massive amount of extremely valuable information to be uncovered in those phone calls about why did you sign up? What problem are you trying to solve? What about the sign up process was good? What wasn't good? You know, where does our product miss the mark, et cetera, et cetera. And so when I did my first product launch for Bread Ideas, which was a full year in, it was in June of 2013. I didn't put into my workflow the opportunity for any of my customers to be able to have a personal contact with me. And so after that product launch, revenue sort of dropped back down again. And then thankfully I started monetizing another way. And so that made up for the shortfall. But in hindsight, I would, like now with my book launch, for example, I made sure that in the communications after the purchase was, hey, book, here's my calendar link, book a time. I want to talk to you because I want to understand who bought my book. Why? Because that information was going to be very helpful for me in figuring out, you know, what to do next. Whereas before, I just kind of had over a week, we got 1,500 customers. So I couldn't have talked to 1,500 people in a week, obviously. But I didn't really know anything about those people. And many of them, you know, that was the only thing that they bought and I didn't have any interaction with them. And so it wasn't the sustainable boost to the business that I was hoping for. And so now I'm a little bit more hands-on with people that buy my stuff so that I get that insight and that information. So there's three really big mistakes I can think of off the top of my head.
Well, thanks, Trent. It's always good for listeners to know that people who've achieved some success with marketing haven't got there just by doing everything right every step of the way. It's certainly, in my experience, the opposite. So thanks for sharing those experiences with us.
Yeah.
Now, if you were speaking earlier about starting again from your first business, what advice would you have to people growing their audience from scratch or starting their web marketing activity from scratch? They don't necessarily have to be a marketing firm, but just any business, small business, medium business, that's looking to grow their digital marketing.
There's a couple, far and away, and I say this having now spoke to a whole bunch of people that bought my book. And a lot of the people that bought my book are just starting out. They are looking to build a business like you and I have, where they have clients and they deliver marketing services to those clients. And far and away, Adam, the biggest mistake is I see too many people getting ready to get ready. They spend an inordinate amount of time trying to figure out, you know, what niche should I be in? What has got my website got to be like? And how am I going to handle outsourcing? And I got to build some processes for this and that. And I was actually on the phone with a guy today. And I said to him, I said, none of that matters until you get a customer. Like, why don't you just email people? Go on social networks and not even email people. Just say, the first thing is, just be in business. Say, I'm producing, just tell people I'm going to produce a research report that highlights what the most successful companies are doing in terms of marketing. And I'd love it if you'd answer a few of my questions. And if you do, I'll give you a free copy of the research report when I'm done. Well, the number one rule in business is connect with people. So when you're producing a research report like that, what are you doing? You're connecting with people. You're not getting ready to get ready. You're on the phone with people. And you're not necessarily having a sales conversation. However, you are asking questions. And when you ask people smart questions, their perception of you will be that you're smart. And if they really and truly have a problem, which when it comes to marketing, most everybody has some kind of a problem, because I've yet to meet an entrepreneur who says, that's it. I got enough customers. I don't want any more. So when you have those conversations, you're positioning yourself favorably. They're easy conversations to have. They're easy to get strangers to agree to spend 10 minutes with you because there's something in it for them, the copy of this research report. You're going to learn a whole bunch, which is going to help you to position yourself and to pick a niche And most importantly, it's going to help you to understand what content you should create when you start off. So I encourage that people do that with 10 or 20 people at least. And you could, I mean, gosh, you could get that done in a couple of days if you were cracking it. And then once you've got that done, so you're gonna need to produce this report, which is, you know, you could use SurveyMonkey, you could be asking people questions and just clicking their answers into SurveyMonkey on their behalf, and wham, there's your report, because SurveyMonkey will output a nice report. And you can email a copy to everybody. And then because of those conversations, you're going to have some ideas of what you should write about, because there's going to be some common themes to the problems people are having. So the smart marketer would then create some blog posts, I would say 10 blog posts that would address those common themes. Get them up on your blog. Now, follow up with everybody that you spoke to during the research. Give them a copy of the report. Direct them to your blog. Ask them to share it socially. And then once you've done that, then call them back up, and it's not a cold call anymore, and say, what did you think? What did you think of the report? What did you think of my blog? And then probe and find out, you know, are there problems that you'd like to solve? Because now you've got trust, rapport, and credibility with these people. And they're gonna go, well, yeah, there's a couple. Well, which one's the biggest one? You know, they're going to tell you, well, when would you like to have that solved by? They're going to give you a date and go, well, how would I solve that for you? If you ask people that question, a percentage of them will say yes. And as soon as one does, you're in business. You didn't spend a whole bunch of time writing a business plan. You didn't spend a bunch of time picking a niche. All of those things come in due course. But until you have a customer, you're not really in business. You're just pretending to be in business. And as I have a YouTube video that's ranked number one on YouTube for this key term, and I get a lot of traffic from it. And it's, if you want to see it, it's how to start a business with no money. And it's been watched almost 500,000 times now. And in that video, I basically explain the best way to succeed in business is to be in business. And you're not in business until you have a customer. And your first customer, not that hard to get.
That's such good advice, because it is so easy to be getting ready. And it's really, because it's terrifying taking that leap from thinking about running a business to putting it all out there and actually taking the plunge, isn't it? So I do often see, and you know, we started out nearly 10 years ago, and mentors said, you know, it's not yet exactly as you said, you don't have a business until you've got a customer. Once you've got a customer, then you've got some money to work with, and then you can worry about getting your website up, getting your logo done, all these other things that often I see people stalling by, or you don't need to get that stuff done, more importantly than getting an actual client. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Another thing I liked of what you said is that you need to get your audience or your customers first and then find a product to make for them, as opposed to making the product first and then trying to sell your wares onto people. Your approach was really smart.
Yeah, and that's actually something I'm glad that you brought that up, because I've done it both ways. When you're first starting out and you don't know your audience that well, making a product first and then trying to sell it is a fool's approach. And you don't need to. If you're making an information product, for example, or you're trying to figure out what service you're going to offer, I would test demand first. Webinars, landing pages, just put up ways that people, like a really smart idea is put up a landing page and follow it up with, you know, offer a free report, put in your follow-up sequence that takes them to a sales page maybe a day or two after they've got the free report with a buy button on it, even if you can't take payment yet. Because wouldn't it be good to know that people are clicking the buy button? And you could take them to, you know, you could take them to a page. I've heard a couple of ways of guys doing this. You could take them to a page that says, hey, my product's not ready yet. Thank you very much for expressing interest. I now have you on the early bird list. Or you could take payment and then email them and say, hey, I'm working on version 2 of my product. And it'll be ready in 30 days. I can either refund your money right now, or I can just hang on to it. And as soon as the version 2 is ready, I'll send it out to you. Well, if people are buying it with their money, because that's the best vote in the whole world. Surveys are great, but credit cards are better, much better. then you know that there's absolute demand for that. Or you could take deposits. So I guess my point is if until you really know your audience, don't build something and hope to sell it. Market it, see if the idea sells, and then build it. Once you know your audience, like with the book, I didn't do that because the book, I knew the book would sell. Or at least I had a high degree of confidence that the book would sell because I had been talking to this particular audience for a year and a half by that point. I'd had hundreds of email interactions, Twitter interactions, webinar interactions, one-on-one phone calls, my mastermind group that I lead. I mean, I knew that these were real problems that people had. And I knew because of how much success Bright Ideas had had in its first year, that the solutions that I wrote about in the book were valuable or valid solutions. So I didn't take that approach of make the product second after I test demand. I just went and made it.
And you'd been in business for a number of years then, so you knew your product, you knew your audience, you knew the problem that you solved, and this was just another product that helped address their problem.
Yeah.
So Trent, looking back, who have been the people that you've known personally or just via their blogs and aspirationally who've helped you the most?
Well, I mentioned Nathan Berry already. Probably... I'd say I've learned from so many. There's not been one person who has had this profound impact on my vision or what I'm doing. There's probably honestly been, like 50 people whose names that I cannot remember off the top of my head at this point in time. You know, I've paid attention to Andrew Warner at Mixergy. I like what Marcus Sheridan is doing. I've paid attention at various times to the Social Media Examiner, a friend of mine, Wes Schaefer. I mean, there's just so many people who I've learned from that I couldn't even begin to just say, well, it was just this one person, because that wouldn't be true.
And what have you learned more from, learning from these people or doing it yourself, or what sort of combination of the two?
Doing it myself by far, by far. Honestly, I'm at a point now where I don't really consume a lot of other people's content, because once you've been drinking the Kool-Aid, I mean, there's new ideas, of course, and there's new techniques, of course, but there's, only so much time in the day to execute all these things. So the best lessons by far are from just doing. And that goes back to the best way to succeed in business is to be in business. Getting ready. Reading ebooks, watching videos. It's okay. And I think some personality styles benefit from it more than others do. But you really need to roll up your sleeves and start digging or shooting or whatever.
Yeah, because I certainly find, you could spend your entire life reading all the books, listening to all the podcasts, watching all the videos and not get through it all. At some point, you've just got to take that plunge and get into it. And I certainly find, learning, I'm always reading, always listening to podcasts, but the beauty of them is that you've actually got a business to apply them to. And I think that's where the lessons in the book actually become concrete, because you're doing it for your own business. And that's when it becomes real. That's when you can really learn how well it works, because as you've said, there's so many books, there's so many different ideas. They're not all going to work for you. Some work a lot better than others. But getting in and actually doing it, which has been why I've certainly loved doing my marketing experiments, sharing them on the blog and now through this podcast. And my first book's coming out shortly. It's called Web Marketing That Works, and it's based on all the different things that Toby and I have been putting into practice over the last 9 years, based on what we've learned, but more importantly, how we've put it into practice. And we share what, for us anyway, has been the most effective way to approach the marketing.
Now, I still believe in education. I mean, I did spend $5,000 on professional development and education in the last year. But that's because now I'm at a point in my business where when I learn a good idea from somebody else, it can have quite an impact. But for people who are just starting, I guess my point is be cautious about how much time you devote to study versus how much time you devote to doing.
Because it's some, yeah, because if it's a stalling tactic, it's not good. If you're learning because you can then implement it, then that is a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Now, Trent, are there any other aha moments that you've had throughout your business or marketing career that you'd like to share with us?
I guess this is where it would have been. I should have probably wrote down an answer to that question before we started to record, because now I have to think of one off the top of my head, and I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to do that. I mean, the big mistakes that I made earlier that I alluded to earlier. The other big aha, when my original vision of Bright Ideas was to not have a consulting division. I wanted to just sell information products and be an Infusionsoft referral partner. And that's worked. That did generate the bulk of the revenue for the year. But we did, when I got married in the summertime, my wife, when we relocated to a new city, the business that she had before didn't transport. So we sort of shut it down. And so that left her, with a bunch of free time. And that's why we started the consulting division. And I guess the aha there was I was surprised at how quickly the business would come in once you have an audience already that follows you. And as soon as we sort of said, and we just sort of sprinkled it into blog posts and in emails saying, if you need help with Infusionsoft, we're now an Infusionsoft certified consultant, give us a call. And people did. And I think we did in our first 2 months, it's in the income report that I published. I think it was $17,000 or $20,000, something like that.
I was really interested to read that article and hear you say that then, because it aligns with what one of our mentors said as well in the early days, is that, if you say, for example, you're selling your premium book at about $300 or just under your book package, I should say, but there's going to be people who like you even more than $300 worth and are willing to pay $3,000 or $30,000 if you give them the opportunity to actually spend that money with you. So I think, realize from what you've said there, opening up the more extremely premium options will certainly attract the people that do like you that much, who are willing to spend that much. So that seems like a really effective and easy way to attract more revenue in.
Absolutely. There was a fellow that I met, and he'd been, his name is Fred, and he's been in radio for probably 40 years, and he did all the radio ads for Priceline.com and one other one. So smart guy. And apologies, Fred, if you're listening, that I can't remember your last name, but he told me about this thing called an elephant offer. And he says, basically that's your super premium high priced offer. And most people won't take it. But if you don't put it out there, the one person that wants to take it can't.
And it also has a secondary benefit of anchoring the price really high so that everything else seems a lot better value, hey?
Yeah, that's the other psychological reason to have an elephant offer.
I've never heard it called an elephant offer, but I like that. I might use that.
I'm sure he won't mind.
Now, Trent, where can people go to find out more about you and to connect with you?
Brightideas.co. I am not a hard guy to get a hold of. There's a contact form on the page. There's all my social profiles are linked to from the blog. And I am very easy to get in touch with.
Well, thank you so much for being a guest on the show today, Trent. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me on, Adam. It's been fun.
Cheers. Well, there we go, the end of our very first guest interview on the Web Marketing That Works podcast. I enjoyed having a chat with Trent Dersmid. I thought that his advice that the number one rule in business is to connect with people, I found that very true and very interesting to hear him talk about that idea. We've also got a long list of influencers that Trent has mentioned, and we will link to those people in the show notes so that we can go ahead and follow their work as well.
Yeah, great. And my thanks to Trent too. So the show is brought to you by Web Marketing That Works, our new book, and specifically the bonus 33 free templates that go with it. So please jump over to bluewiremedia.com.au/book to access those. And, you know, the intent is always to deliver actionable advice. So we'd love your feedback, or questions are welcome as well. If you've got any, please let us know via email or Twitter. My email is toby.jenkins@bluewiremedia.com.au or @toby_jenkins on Twitter.
And I am adam.franklin@bluewiremedia.com.au and franklin_adam on Twitter. If you like the show, we would love it if you could leave an honest review on iTunes, and we will hopefully give a shout out to the listeners that leave us a 5-star review. Until next time, have a good one.
Thanks very much, everyone.